Hello, and welcome to the January 11th edition of Kaechung Radio's The Talking Show. My name is Steve Cato, and I am here in the studio with none other than Nicholas Miller.
Good night, Nicholas Miller.
Hello. Sorry.
Hey there.
We're a little out of shape,
folks.
We're
a little rusty.
Yeah.
Steve was snowed in up north of the wall. The snowpocalypse caught him by the tail. I was here fully thawed. Took a little bit of much needed time off. We weren't sure if it was going to work out tonight with all the flooding.
Yes.
There's been so much flooding here. Have you seen pictures of the Union Station flood, Steve?
That always happens. That is like one of the I arrived back in Los Angeles the day or so after the last major rainstorm, and it was obvious that the walkway under the trains had just recently flooded. They were still dealing with it when I was coming back from the flyaway. So, you know, it is what it is, folks. But yeah, it's incredible. I missed the worst of the snow upon arriving in Canada. My folks actually live now sort of not far from the shore of Lake Erie, which was, you know, broadly speaking, not far from Buffalo, where like the worst of it, you know, that's where all the people died during the snowstorm. So we could go see places that were like quite extreme. But it was not, it was over when we landed. And so it was just like the rain was just sort of falling on it and melting all the ice and stuff. And then when I arrived here, it was a sunny day, but it had clearly just been like a big storm the night before. It's like if you arrived today to Los Angeles as opposed to yesterday or the day before when there was, again, torrential rains. You know, it is awfully nice to see the sun today, I have to say. You know, it felt good to, like, do you see the sunset today, Nicholas?
I did.
Did you catch any of that?
The last few afternoons, I happened to be leaving Pasadena, California, and I take the 210 on the way to Los Angeles. You know, it lifts up over Eagle Rock.
Yeah.
It's quite a beautiful vista from which to see the city, and it's gorgeous after the rain.
That is a lovely... That's one of the better highways, I think, too. It's not that trafficked. I guess that stretch of it is pretty busy between sort of linking North Glendale, Eagle Rock, and Pasadena. But it's not like, I don't know. It's not as bad as like taking the 5 or something like that, where you're also like in a dungeon or something.
Yeah. Most places I need to go, the map app recommends I take the 110 freeway, and I've given up on that one. It's too dangerous, and people seem to die on it every time it rains. It's really very frightening.
Wild. People die on it? I guess the 110 north, you mean, like to and from Pasadena.
Yeah. That little stretch between Pasadena to, say, Chinatown. They say it's the first stretch of freeway.
Yeah.
So that's what they claim. The road's too curvy for how short the on and off ramps are. The last time I drove on it was returning from the west side on New Year's Eve day. Getting to the west side was easy, but that strip of the 110.
Yeah. So chill.
Took about an hour. There were 3 accidents on the 110. It was pretty harrowing.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. Yeah, bad accidents. Nothing you want to get tangled up in. Trust me.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, anyway, Happy New Year, dear listener. Happy, the sun's out. I feel like we're sort of finally starting the year afresh. After sort of like the long tail end of 2022 drizzling over into the new year. Do you make any New Year's resolutions, Nicholas?
Yes, I have one New Year's resolution, but is that the kind of thing that if you say it, it won't happen?
I don't have strong feelings about that. No, I think there's reasons for genuine belief on all sides, right? But I don't.
I'll keep it to myself then.
All right.
I don't know.
You don't want to
jinx it.
Fair.
How about you, Steve? Since you don't have strong feelings,
I don't have any resolutions either.
Okay. Well, that's why you don't have strong feelings.
Yeah, the whole thing is just wishy-washy. It's there's absolutely no character at all. It's just a purely contingent lizard brain style, like twitching in one direction or twitching in another direction. Absolutely no backbone or self-confidence whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll spill the beans then. Why not, right?
I don't know. I don't be peer pressured.
Your truth. Well, you're directly affected by my resolution, Steve. My resolution is to spend more time with my close friends.
Ah.
Including you, Steve, here at the K Chung studio.
That's true.
Yeah. And part of that resolution perhaps should be to connect with old friends.
Hmm. Like who?
Yeah, well, I've made so many good friends here on the talking show.
It's true.
We've had hundreds of people through the show. There was a particular pair a few years back that I'd like to bring back this week, to keep up with my resolution.
Right.
It's always good to check in with those friends from San Clemente.
And so are we going to play the historical episode that we did before?
Yeah.
First?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I know that our listeners have over the holidays endured a lot of reruns, but I want them to be assured that this is not yet another one of those reruns. This is like a clip show. You know, we're playing some greatest hits, and then we're going to swing into action with some all new content.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're dedicated to a HBO series and you're ready for the next season, but there were years that intervened between the first and second. You need that little bit of catch-up teaser at the beginning to get you in the mood.
Yeah, that is true. Although, you know what's really funny is the one that they make at the end to tell you what happened in the episode you just watched on the HBO shows. They do really? They were doing it for all of the last seasons of Game of Thrones and stuff, where it was like you would finish the episode of Game of... And this is like... this is when Game of Thrones is also like stinky. You know, it's like bad. Like season 8 or whatever. And it would finish. And then like Benioff and Weiss would come on. And they would be like, so what happened here is Daenerys is clearly mad. And you're like, yeah, I saw the episode where she got mad and like killed the guy. You know, had that guy killed. fed that guy to a dragon.
What we did here was we asked the actor to act mad, and then we shot her acting mad.
So she seems pretty mad here. That's because someone did something that was enraging to the character. And then like every now and again, the guy brings up his like, I don't know why this bothers me so much, but there's this like, there's this kind of guy, who wears like some sort of giant leather cuff on his wrist. Like, maybe there's, like, a wristwatch embedded in it, but in some cases, it's just, like, some sort of weird leather cuff. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a Malibu look, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. God, I hate seeing that thing. And so, like, the guy with the eyebrows, like, there's the one who looks sort of like a baby that grew to man size and is very skinny, like, never got wider. And then there's the guy who sort of looks like a forgotten Eugene Levy, son of Eugene Levy kind of thing. That guy. And that guy has some sort of weird wrist cuff. So he would like bring the wrist cuff. He'd bring his hand up to gesture like, she got mad. And then like wave his cuff at me. And I would just be so offended. I was just like, man, this cuff is bumming me out. But now that you mentioned that it's like sort of like, I don't know, some sort of like surfer adjacent thing, maybe I shouldn't be so judgy, least of all with our current guests in the studio. So are we going to roll that clip, that historical clip now?
Yeah. Last bit on that. I wonder if it's protective, you know, if the vestiges of some early protection you needed while surfing. Yeah, the origins of surfing.
I know perhaps. That stuff like that is part of like different kinds of sword fighting. Yeah, although that actually tends to be some sort of weird semi-glove.
Yeah, honestly, there's no excuse for it. Just none at all. But right, let's roll that clip.
You don't need, either way, you don't need to wear it to the television studio. You know what I mean? If it's protecting you from some sort of aspect of surfing, there are no waves at the HBO studios in Burbank or wherever they're filming that thing. Anyway, roll the clip. Sorry. Enough of me.
Good evening. You are listening to
Ooh.
The Talking Show on K Chung Radio, Chinatown's only.
That's right.
That's right.
Only.
Micro broadcasting radio station. I'm Nicholas Miller.
He's Nicholas Miller.
And what you just heard.
Yeah.
Was Steve Cato.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Steve Cato.
Hi. Hi, it's me. It's me, Steve Cato. Hi, everyone. Hi there. So, I know this is a time where we normally discuss matters of television. Nicholas, have you been watching the much-advertised return of Twin Peaks to the boob tube?
No, I didn't see the newest episode of Twin Peaks. Did you see it?
No. I'm kind of confused by it. Like, it's like, how is this on, what is Showcase? This is like the first time I've heard of Showcase. This is the thing that keeps happening to me in America where I'll have felt like I've been here for a long time and I'll have seen things. I'll be like, oh, there are restaurants. There's like a restaurant called Denny's. There's a restaurant called Yoshinoya. You know, these are the names of some restaurants. And then someone's like, have you heard of Marie Callender's? It's a huge chain. And I'm like, I've heard of BJ's. I've heard of TGI Fridays. I've heard of Red Lobster. But no, I've never heard of Marie Callender's. And then like, you'll be driving through Alhambra and you'll see one Marie Callender's. And I don't think I could ever guess that that was a chain. I only see one of them. And I feel the same way about Showtime. Like, suddenly there's a new season of Twin Peaks. There's billboards everywhere. And they say it's on Showtime. And I'm like, when has there ever been Showtime?
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I've just been locked away reading all of the most recent art news.
Oh, Kunst.
There's some really riveting stuff going on out there. Like,
did
you happen to read about the new reward that they put out?
No, a reward for what? For art? That seems unbelievable.
That was put out by the Boston Gardner Museum.
Oh. Oh, is this? This is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wild story. So in 1990, what's that? Almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Two men dressed like Boston police officers walked into the Gardner Museum and stole a Manet, a Vermeer, and a Degas.
Sick.
You know, worth quite a bit of money. And so they immediately put out a reward for $5 million for any information that led to the arrest or securing or recovery of the paintings. And then as of yesterday, the reward was upped to $10 million.
Wow.
Which, as far as I know, is the largest reward for anything in the United States. I guess not for anything. I mean, when those guys do really well on Wall Street, they get pretty big rewards. But, you know, any largest reward in the Wild West sense of the word, you know, recovered dead or alive. Although in this case, I don't think recovered dead is going to work out so well.
Yeah.
And the plot thickens. Many people think that the paintings were initially stolen and used to get a famous Boston mobster out of prison.
No.
Which at this point, he is either out of prison or not. And the people who took the paintings are probably wondering what to do with these paintings. One theory has it that the paintings are probably hiding in plain sight, and so that the investigators should be going door to door looking at private art collections.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe they should just set up like a citywide art walk. Anyone who has any pictures on their walls has to open their doors.
That'd be amazing.
Maybe K-Chung should organize this.
This is great.
What do you think? If K-Chung could pull it off, we could definitely get this signal broadcast at least another half mile or so, wouldn't you say?
I think this would be incredible. This would be a wonderful thing to do. Just like go and fully audit all pictures. I feel like, all right, maybe it's all the sci-fi I've been reading, but I think that, I think it's becoming more and more imaginable every day that Donald Trump could become impeached and could be impeached, not become impeached. And were he to be impeached, we would be stuck with President Mike Pence, which is like, if you're a woman, so therefore like half of the population of America, that's like a bad deal for you. You will be only allowed to speak with the permission of a man and probably can't drive anymore, things like this. You will definitely not be able to secure any birth control, etc. And so under the Pence theocracy, I think one of the things that I understand about him is that he's not a Catholic. He's a Protestant. And if you're that much of a Protestant, you probably believe in the literal word of the Bible, and thus may adhere to the commandment against the worship of graven idols. And in that case, one would then need to know what representations are present in each household. How many of them are there? What is their number? And could one be of a false idol? And if so, probably there will be some sort of Fahrenheit 451 situation where the firemen go around, they're wearing asbestos suits, they pick up all the inappropriate images and destroy them. So I think this is something that is likely to happen anyway.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of civic duty, I should begin to introduce our guest tonight. One prefatory comment. Steve and I are the first to admit that the last two episodes have been longer than usual.
True.
And not only has the K-Chung administration come down hard on us, but so have our listeners. We understand that our show is late at night, and some of you sacrifice sleep, much needed sleep, to listen. So we decided to reward you, all of you who stayed up late with us the last two Wednesdays, with a rather brief but passionate episode tonight. So tonight we have two of San Clemente's rising political stars, a very passionate pair of young men, the truly inimitable Chad and Bodie.
What up, council? My name is Chad Kroger. First, I just want to say I'm truly honored to be here, to be in a city where you can have a surf session and then go to a city council meeting within the span of an hour. I think that just shows that the American dream is still very much alive. So thank you. All right, to the serious stuff. I stand before you here today in the midst of gnarly times. I'm a freelance journalist, and after interviewing hundreds of people, I've witnessed firsthand the ever-growing divide between Americans and families torn apart over political differences. It's in times like these we need a unifying figure we can all turn to, a beacon of headlights that can guide us down the dusty road. I was 11 years old when my first love, Ashley, betrayed me by moving to Newport Beach. I felt lost, alone, bummed. And it was in that melancholy that my dad took me to see The Fast and the Furious, where for an hour and 47 minutes, I transcended my worries because I had just met my new hero, Paul Walker. Afterwards, at Carl's Jr., I thought about what Paul taught me. I think the most inspiring thing was the fact that even after Dominic Toretto beat him in that first race, Paul still managed to bed his sister. Pretty inspiring. And another thing is the fact that he still saved Vince, even though Vince was flexing on him the entire movie and questioned his love for tuna sandwiches, which I think is a true testament to his character. And I just want to go off book here. You know, it wasn't just Fast and the Furious. He inspired me in a ton of other movies as well. Skulls, Meet the Deedles, 8 Below, Into the Blue, Varsity Blues, just to name a few, and that rhymes. Paul's on-screen legacy was unfortunately cut short. But that does not mean his impact on society must be cut short as well. Detroit has the RoboCop. Philly has Rocky. We need Paul Walker. That is why I'm proposing that the city erect a 12-foot-tall steel statue of Paul Walker on the pier. And I'm also proposing that it be sculpted by none other than Damian Ortega, best known for his installation of White Cube 2003. The new Fast and the Furious is fast approaching. It comes out next month, and so we don't have much time. So I'm just going to ask you guys straight up, how can we get started? When can we break ground?
Do you have any comments?
All right, I'll let you guys think about that.
Yeah,
Thank you so much.
Here, I'll think about it. Just real quick, bacon, just curious on the messaging. Is that in support of the Paul Walker initiative, or is that totally unrelated?
It's just my favorite hat.
Bacon's just awesome.
Yeah.
Which I completely agree with. Does Paul Walker have any tie whatsoever to our city in any regard?
He went to high school here. Yeah.
His cousin went to high school here.
Oh, his cousin did?
I'm a big fan of Paul Walker, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But no. Sorry, bro.
All right.
Also, I don't think we have any statues or anything on the pier, right?
We don't have any statues of anybody going around here.
But
although I love the affection, there's obviously deep well of affection for Mr. Walker.
Yeah.
Your point is we need an inspiring figure, and that's a very powerful message.
Yeah.
Thank you. Someone
who can help.
Yes, it is. Great.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next speaker is Bodie Johnson, Anthony Lafrano, and Jennifer Massey.
Hello, Council. I'm really nervous. I haven't spoken public since my stepmom's funeral. My name is Bodie. I'm also a freelance journalist. 2017 has been a bummer year so far. You probably can't tell by looking at me, but I'm a laid-back dude, and everyone has just been so steamed lately. Well, I'm PO too, because we're all just running around being literally non-unified. It's in times like these that we need a unifying figure we can all turn to, a beacon of headlights that can guide us down a dusty road. Sorry, Chad, I stole that from your speech, but it was good. We've been to all the council hangouts all over SoCal trying to build the statue. Watching that movie was epically life-changing. It gave me the courage to ask out Shelby. It taught me to never back down, even if a super tough crew of street racers come at you. Stand tall. I'm pretty sure Paul's cousin went to San Clemente High School for at least a couple semesters, and Paul's spirit encompasses what this town is all about, which is why I'm here before you today. The thing is, though, I'm really busy right now. I'm taking a couple junior college classes, and I don't have time to be driving all over fighting for statues. It says on my shirt, when you put goodwill out there, what can be accomplished by Paul Walker. So let's accomplish this. Let's do the right thing. And we even have a visual aid of what we think the statue should look like.
Yeah.
Is that Chris Ham?
Who's Chris Ham?
Exactly. That's exactly my point.
This right? P Dubs. My boy Walker. And anyway, thank you. Adjourned.
I like that. That's good. I think that's a young
old. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jennifer Massey.
Wow.
Hard to argue with Chad and Bodhi. These are truly gnarly times.
So, gnar.
Yeah. No, the country, as they said, feels literally non-unified.
Literally. Like in a book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I gotta admit, when I moved to California, I was really looking forward to chatting with people that speak in this way. The surfer dialect is by far one of my favorite American English dialects. It's just lovely, very lovely, and incredibly visceral.
Yeah.
And onomatopoetic and extremely terse. And its capacity to express, you know? I mean, to say that people have been really steamed these days. I had never heard that before until Bodhi said it, and immediately I knew what he meant.
Yeah.
What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I agree. It's like a very short path between point A and point B. One says this, and then the feelings are immediately apparent. There is no what it lacks in complexity, it makes up for in sort of like visceral punch. You know? I think I definitely agree with you. And I also feel like I was quite the opposite. I assumed maybe this is my Canadian upbringing, but I assumed that all the stereotypes you understand about a place are not in fact accurate, and that that people wouldn't do that thing that you think that they should do. So I was surprised that anyone spoke like Bodhi and Chad. When I found some who spoke like Bodhi and Chad, I was flabbergasted because I had just assumed that this was like another instance of the media creating a stereotype that was non-real. But in California, in Southern California, all the people who make the unreality are just broadcasting their own slices of life. Like, I also didn't realize that, like, many Mexican people listen to polka music, you know, essentially, like, that norteña brass music. And, like, wow. You know, I thought that would be, like, I thought that was a stereotype. I assumed that they listened to, you know, all kinds of music that I don't know about, but that, you know, Mexican people would know about. And that it would sound like all kinds of music, just the way all the other kinds of music that people assume to listen to are. But then I was amazed that there was such a large following for this seemingly, like, hokey, you know, Bavarian beer hall style polka music. But there you go. You know, that's real. That wasn't a joke. And you know what? I mean, like, the thing about finding out that the stereotypes are real is that you realize that, you know, people are set up for this from birth. How do you get to be named Bodhi? Who names their kid Bodhi? You already have to be very changa to consider Bodhi as like a great name for your kid. So your kid is named Bodhi. Your kid is by default, like from birth, going to be this chill. And then, you know, you're throwing shakas, you're like living your life, and Bodhi grows up and gets into politics and becomes a freelance journalist. Who cares passionately about the issues of municipal politics. So, you know, I think like there were really some things I didn't understand about Southern California before moving here. And, you know, obviously that I do now. And, you know, having said that and having realized that this is like a way of speaking that some people do have, I still think that it is like either endangered or rare, because you don't hear this very often. You know?
Yep. Yeah.
You know.
I know. And I even have friends who surf.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And they don't do it.
Yeah.
It's completely verboten to talk that way. Oh, well.
Well, you know, here's one thing I heard actually from a local, you know, because, you know, you and I are both newcomers here relatively, but Sam Davis said that, you know, growing up here on the West Side, the only people who surfed were like morons. Surfing was for jocks who, if you were in, you know, with the smart kids and interested in weird music and all the stuff that has, you know, understandably brought us together. Sam has been a guest on the show. Sam has his own K-Chung radio show with Paul Salveson, you know, so Sam is in a jazz fusion band that until Sam joined it, I was the drummer in, you know. We're obviously united by common interests. And for people with interests like that who grew up here, you know, you do not go surfing and you don't express yourself like a surfer. And for people like that where I grew up, like, you do not play hockey and you don't talk like, you know, your stereotypical Canadian. You don't say A and O, and you don't talk about getting your Tim Hortons or whatever. You know, like, you don't do that. So, yeah. So what do you think about the actual artwork in question? Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting proposal to have Damian Ortega do a large steel sculpture of Paul Walker.
Yeah.
You know, Paul, I guess,
good old Paul.
Regularly handsome guy. Not so responsible in automobiles.
No.
But perhaps that could be overlooked.
Maybe.
If he were to become a kind of civic figure. I guess, to be fair, you look at most public statues of great white men and they did something terrible. Like, they like raped slaves or did all sorts of awful, awful shit. So maybe meeting one's own demise, hurling through space in a very fast car is not the worst feature of a public sculpture. But I guess I can't say that I've ever really been all that moved or inspired by a public sculpture. How about you, Steve?
Yeah, no, I can't really think of. I used to, there's one on the tip of my tongue and I just can't remember it, but, you know, near my studio, there's a sculpture, for example, of Romp and Stompin' General George Pershing, who was a homicidal maniac, who was like one of the worst people, like a violent maniac who committed horrible human rights violations, genocide possibly. You know, like, he's like a terrible person, and there's stuff named after him all over sort of downtown Los Angeles. So, I mean, your point's well taken, I think. Like, civic sculpture, like, if all you do is drive recklessly, maybe we just need to put your statue outside the DMV, we don't need to like put your statue near an area populated almost entirely by populations you've killed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, now that you say it, there was one public sculpture that kind of moved me. It was a, it's a long story. Maybe I'll tell it just since we had such a short performance today. So I went with my ex-girlfriend, Erin, now ex-girlfriend at the time, was full girlfriend.
Total girlfriend.
To Berlin, and it ended up being cheaper to fly into Frankfurt, which I think is sort of common. And so we had some time to kill in Frankfurt, and it turns out the Theodor Adorno Memorial is rather close to the train station in Frankfurt where we were. So we decided to walk, you know, 20 minutes or so there. And we were walking, and we kind of saw some storm clouds gathering in the distance, thought about turning around, decided to go forward with it. So we went there, and I had seen pictures of Adorno's memorial before. So I knew what it would look like. It's his final writing desk with, I think, a few things on it, like pens and pencils and a lamp, maybe even a book or two, some paper, in an outdoor park encased in a perfect glass cube.
Dreamy.
So as we were rounding the bend to get to the sculpture, it was strange because there was, in the place of it, just a giant black cube. not what I expected. So when we got closer, we realized that it was a tarp, like made out of thick cotton, sewn perfectly to fit over this cube. Very German, in fact. And it had been slid over the cube, covering up the memorial. But one of the hems had been torn because clearly somebody wanted to get underneath this thing. So I peeled it back and saw that one of the faces of the cube had been smashed, you know, with a bat or something like that, and had created this kind of beautiful shatter pattern on the face of this architectural grade glass. And then when I looked on the ground, and the bricks, each in front of each face of the cube was a name of one of the books Adorno wrote, because I guess apparently he only wrote four proper books. I didn't realize that. So the face that had been destroyed was the face labeled Minima Moralia, which, as you know, Steve, the subtitle is Reflections on a Damaged Life. Yeah, well, that probably wasn't even the most fitting part. The most fitting part was we were walking back from the memorial, feeling a little bummed. I was a little steamed, if you will. And it started raining really hard on us. Yeah. Yeah, bummer. And we're sitting out there trying to hail a cab. All the cabs are driving by because they're full. And we're standing in front of a German bank, maybe Deutsche Bank, I don't remember exactly. And this guy walks out in like a beautiful suit out of the bank and says hello to us and hands me an incredibly nice umbrella. You know, like the kind of umbrella you see proper businessmen carrying around in New York. And he just looks at me and says, keep it. And then turns back in and goes back to work in the bank. So we were standing under this perfectly manufactured umbrella, waiting for our cab to take us back to our damaged lives.
Oh, beautiful story.
Bummer.
Dark.
Well, on that note, good morning, Chinatown.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a really great one.
It's funny how young we sound.
Well, it was many years ago, Steve.
It's really something. You know, you do a show for a long time, and I don't want to say it becomes routine because every week is exciting on the talking show. But it is one of those things where you... You get used to doing it, you know. It's just part of your. It's part of your life. Every Wednesday, we do this, right? It's part of the fabric of my everyday life, and to be transported backwards in time that way, and be like, wow, listen to that. Listen to all the hope in his voice. about myself. Just crazy. You know, the world was so different then.
It's true. Unfortunately, many things have changed. As with last time, our guests tonight shuffled in a bit late. Good thing we had that historical episode queued up as a bit of a pre-teaser. But we're very surprised to not see Bodhi here tonight. This is a Bodhi-less duo. Tragic.
Right. We had sort of billed this as Chad and Bodhi coming back.
Yeah. It's our bad. We should have warned our listeners. We billed the show wrong. We've got several loyal Bodhi fans who are here in the studio audience. We're very sorry. But what's happened is Chad is here with JT, and they've taken their act on the road. They've professionalized, and Bodhi didn't make the cut. Sorry about that. But it seems like it's gone pretty well. You know, Chad looks good. We can see right out the window. Chad rolled up here in a brand spanking new Tesla.
Yep. One of several Teslas parked outside the K-Chung Studios these days, though. You know, the way things have gone.
Yeah, it's true.
There's George Jensen's Tesla. There's Solomon's three Teslas. There's Brett's Tesla. I know that Brett hasn't been on in a long time, but Brett still parks his Tesla here overnight. He still has keys to the parking lot. There's Ian James's Tesla, which he just parks here because he's got all his other vans parked at Leroy's.
So many Teslas.
There's Joe Stewart's Cybertruck.
Yeah, but to be fair, none of those guys are here. They're not here jamming at K-Chung, doing joints and smoking beers like we used to in the lobby. They've all professionalized, and you know, they've moved up in this world. And they just use the free parking spots that K-Chung provides them. They're grandfathered into those spots. It's bittersweet because we're happy for them. You know, they're comfortable, but you know, when you professionalize, you take on certain risks, and some friendships don't last. It's very sad.
And his new accomplice, JT.
Well, let's hear this new act, this new duo. Everyone, put your hands together for Chad and JT.
Sir, what is your name?
What up? My name is Chad Kroger. Council, when I'm bummed, I party, and I feel better for a while. If the party's really sick, though, I feel better for longer. A lot of ragers have made me feel really stoked. Keggers at my buddy Danny's, foam parties, and bottle service at Hakkasan. The ragers that truly make my froth peak, though, and this is beyond debate, are on a boat. Nothing feels as legit as being on a yacht deck with a linen shirt open. My body tight from a pre-vacay juice cleanse. What a freaking boost. One thing that bums me out, though, is that not everyone gets to participate. Why is it that only people like P. Diddy, Jeff Bezos, and my Uncle Ron get to experience the euphoria of being on a yacht? I think I have the solution. We need public yachts. 60 to 120-foot boats that can be borrowed like books from the library. The boat borrowers would have to do a lot of paperwork, which will blow, but I think it's necessary. With the public yacht program, our countrywide malaise would get sprayed away by jet ski water.
Thank you, Chad. Thank you. Next speaker, are you JT Parr?
What up, council? I am JT Parr. Chad is not exaggerating when he says that partying on a boat can benefit your soul. I suffer from anxiety. I often worry that my dad thinks I'm a whiner, but those worries disappear when I jump off a yacht's tuna tower. That's why Chad, who is too modest to include his role, set up the boat party. What a legend. That single day partying on the boat reset my brain. We stood on the bow and laughed with some nice girls from Denver. We also made friends with the crew, and I'm eager to read the graphic novel 300 that the first mate Darren loaned me. The benefits from the boat day were immense. That is why I believe, like Chad, that every American should enjoy the right to party on a yacht and or rip on a wave runner. We should be more egalitarian when it comes to boats. We mustn't forget we are Americans. We do big things, like the Transcontinental Railroad or going to the moon. People may ask why public yachts, and I say because there's not a danker idea in the world.
All right, council. It is 1:15 a.m. Jack.
What up, Council? My name is Chad Kroger.
First of all, hang on just a moment.
Yep.
So you may have a seat until they'll call you up. All right. Thank you very much.
First, I just want to say thank you. Nothing gets me more stoked than 6 hours of civil service. I come to you from a land called SoCal, and also just want to say that I'm honored to be in this newfound land of Delaware. I wasn't aware that the government had inducted the 51st state, but I'm stoked that you joined America. Welcome.
First state, dude.
According to our sources, an attempt has been made to suppress their right to party. Not to get too lawyery on you, but this is in direct violation of the Constitution. Our forefathers valued the right to rage without government restriction. Obviously, the forefathers loved to get naked and funnel brews. As a young man entering college, I had dabbled in partying, but I had yet to fully hop on the BL Smooth froth train. It wasn't until a day party called Jungle that I discovered my edge and freed myself from party self-consciousness. Upon arrival, I was stiff. I hadn't even taken my shirt off yet, and the thought of dropping dong had not even entered my mind space. But then my college buddy Ass Clown threw on Strobe by Deadmau5, and my body just went haywire on the dance floor. After tearing it up, I had a fire combo with Tiffany Van Raphorst, and we dated for 2 weeks after. The self-confidence I gained from that epic flame with Tiff turned me from a man into an activist. Council, I beg of you, please refund this law. Much like Gandhi, I've been on a juice cleanse and protest and will continue this cleanse until the situation is rectified. We must not prevent these kids from reaching their full potential. Thank you.
Thank you for being here tonight, JT.
Thank you. Good job, Chad.
Thank you.
What up, Council? It was a shrewd political move to push the party portion to later in the meeting. It tested my patience, but I persevered and I learned some really cool stuff. I've often talked about the first time my dog Chad and I shared a beer bong. It was a four-hose beer bong, and I subbed in for a dude who was on antibiotics. As we twisted the nozzle and opened our throats, I realized something. The beer bong hose was more than a hose. It was a link to my brother and the poor. Later that night, Chad and I roasted marshmallows on my couch that we had lit on fire and thanked the stars for providing us with parties. Under your new party laws, I might have never met my beer bong partner for life. Pause for effect. I know you think you're helping by placing restrictions on partying. Labeling more than four people hanging out as a party, though, that means this council meeting could be called a party. This is chill, but this is not a party. And placing restrictions on parties won't stop parties. In California during weed prohibition, I knew some dudes who were still getting baked. Quite a few, actually. The best thing you can do is not place restrictions on partying, but create more communication around partying. The best way to communicate this point, though, is at a party. That's where people open up and say how they really feel. I invite the entire council to be brave and come rage with the student body, and let's see if we can't talk straight up about who we are and what we want. If you can rage, I'll know I can trust you. But even if you don't, that's legit. I'm not here to be divisive. I'm here to build bridges, dank bridges, that can support more than one party. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, these chaps came in here, and they talk about having their bongs or pongs or pings or whatever they are. It says here, prohibited activities, possession or use of any apparatus, including but not limited to beer pongs, tables, pong tables, beer funnels. Now, how can these people come in here? What kind of people are these? It's been a long night.
It has been. Thank you.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Wow.
I wonder, I mean, it's funny, you know, like LA City Council has not been covering itself in glory these days. You know, quite the opposite, quite the opposite. There was an actress doing the voice of disgraced and now resigned city councilor Nuri Martinez on this recording, for example. And you can tell that, like, they're used to disruptions at LA City Council. There was that, like, police services board meeting that ended with, I yield my time, suck my dick, and choke on it, fuck you. You know, because that kind of, that's the way things have been going at City Hall. So, they seem like they're kind of taking
chill.
They're taking, but they're also taking Chad and JT in stride, you know, like it's not a, this isn't the first time anyone's crossed their path who's, you know, been a little colored a little outside the lines. But boy, those people in Delaware really seem like they had no idea what was coming.
No, I mean, do they even have beer bongs in Delaware? I mean, they're not my preferred way of intaking beer. Kind of intense, but
no,
they're not particularly offensive.
Well, they're not particularly hard to affect. It's like, it's not like,
yeah, it's a Home Depot project.
It's not like a Mars rover or something, you know, where it's like, you can't make one, you know, like, you can do this at home. The most ambitious bong in my undergrad experience was someone had made like one of those old He-Man Castle Grayskull play sets into a giant bong. Yeah, I don't know who. A marijuana bong, but like,
yeah.
Someone.
Well, marijuana bongs were very illegal when I was growing up. It was an illicit piece of paraphernalia. You could go to jail for having one on you.
Oh, but you could always say you were just using it to smoke tobacco.
Yeah. I think there was an olfactory difference between the tobacco and the marijuana bongs.
You know, who's to say what your crazy roommates got up to with your beloved Castle Grayskull 4-liter bong? And to be fair, no one I knew actually made that. Someone, now that I think about it, someone just discovered it upon moving into a new place. Like they opened the closet and they were like, what the fuck is this? And like, you'll remember, I don't know, it was like a 2-foot high item. So you would have this like 2-foot by 18 inch by like 1-foot deep skull shaped castle that you would have to like put on your lap, I guess. I don't know. Cool. I hope that the vibes from that were appropriately metal, but you know, yeah, the people of Delaware probably are only really used to like what, like credit card running the credit card industry, predatory lending. Not really used to this kind of thing.
I bet it's a fine wine kind of place that goes along with financial corruption, right?
Really?
Yeah,
Delaware. You know what's funny? I just learned where Delaware was the other day. Like, I know the president comes from there, but I had no idea where it was. And when I learned that it was just like a weird part of Maryland, it blew my mind. That's so weird. It's like people always make fun of Rhode Island for being this like dumb, weird appendix type state, you know? Like, well, it's not Rhode Island, ha ha ha, you know, or whatever, like. But yeah. Like Delaware isn't gets it, a pass?
Isn't it like the Switzerland of the U.S.?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's like no tax.
Anytime you start a business, you're supposed to get it registered in Delaware for tax reasons.
Your business is registered in Delaware, right?
No, I haven't really sorted that out yet.
Well, anyway, if you know it's good for you, you'll finish that process. The smart money says they can't catch you if you do it in Delaware.
Yeah, I'm not putting any of my money into Delaware if they're canceling partying like that. I'm on Chad and JT's side. Keep that money in California.
Big of you.
We should have public yachts too.
That's true. I mean, we have a lot of coastline, and you can get to Santa Monica by subway.
Yeah.
So,
not today with the recent rains, but soon.
I think you can get there by subway today.
Oh, okay.
I think yesterday you really couldn't.
Fair. Yesterday, yeah. Yeah.
And then maybe this weekend you won't again either, right? There's rain on the horizon as well.
Oh, my gosh.
I wonder if we could send Chad and JT to have a little talk with someone about the weather. speaking of just total bummers, you know?
You know, I didn't really think that those two would be for yachts. Yeah, I think of the surfing crew or surfing set as being entertained by the simple joys of life, you know, like a sunset. Yeah, like they could raise a bill for more better sunsets or something like that rather than yachts.
Right. Or, I mean, I would say, yeah, like, well, I think it's funny. It's like, yeah, like surfing is one of those things where on the one hand, it's like this very direct communication with nature, right? Like you just go out there and deal with the ocean. But then like the ability to actually do it requires immense privilege. I think like kind of like most sports on the water, right? Like I don't know a lot of poor people with boats. I don't know a lot of poor surfers. You know, you hear these stories about some guy in a Winnebago and that's all he does. And sure, that guy is probably does exist. But like the majority of people you encounter are like guys who were showrunners on Game of Thrones wearing an awkward leather cuff. You know, who can take the mornings off?
I think to encounter the real heads, you need to be a part of the sport.
I think that, well, that's true, obviously. But I'm just saying that like, you know, that the heads aren't enough to sustain the you can't run a company on the heads. You know what I mean? Like and you can't run a company that makes those without like, you know, needing the Game of Thrones showrunners to pay the bills.
Yeah. Maybe it's another detrimental effect of professionalizing. You know, he's got his Tesla now. He's getting interested in yachts. He's developed a champagne taste for a surfer.
Yeah.
Whereas before, this whole project got kicked off just trying to passionately argue for a public sculpture of Hollywood hero Paul Walker.
R.I.P. I was in the laundromat on Monday in the middle of a immense downpour, and it was Too Fast, Too Furious, starring Paul Walker and Vincent Diesel. And I was thrilled to see it. It was great. There's nothing better than watching Paul Walker, one of Southern California's finest talents, acting in his what's the word I'm looking for? Like his like the apex role, like the role he was destined to play forever. Anyway, it was a delight. It's true. It's like we've moved from the realm of supporting sort of local folk heroes to sort of supporting a general, well, you know what though? A socialized leisure class, you know, like fully automated luxury communism. Public yachts, I say. Why not? If they were advocating for private yachts, that would be terrible. But public yachts, I say, go for it. Good night.
Good morning, Chinatown.